Blog Talk Radio.
To Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams, and we have an exciting show for you today. And when I say exciting, it touches me deeply because of a very personal relationship that Karen Jones Meadows and I share with a historical figure who lives on in each of us, that being Harriet Tubman. And I want to, before I bring Karen on, I want to introduce her by letting you hear a little snippet of her in relationship to Harriet Tubman. And we're going to talk about her reinventing, but breathing life into Harriet in a very unique and beautiful way in her play, Harriet Returns. But let's take a moment to listen.
I feel myself changing back into leadership when I thought certainly we'd all be sharing the burden by now. I see you sitting side by side. They say fix the problem. I'm teaching the love you have. I'm back to being one of the most spies and seeing people in the world. A black slave, some old cuss waiting to jump out and mess up your self-esteem. I understand you. Can't you understand?
Let's journey back in time.
Way in the water, wait in the water, children, wait in the water.
My life's gone to trouble, the water,
I'm floating, wait in the water, you gotta wait.
Hello,
than Moses led my God.
God
he called the trouble of
the
water.
Sweet Honey and the Rock, Wade in the Water. My guest today is Karen Jones Meadows, and she is an award-winning author, actress, producer, and educator who writes for adult and youth audiences with an emphasis on creating dynamic characters that are universal in theme, passion, and resolution. Her work reflects diversity of the world's population, thoughts, and cultures. She is currently a cast member in My Mother's Daughter, a groundbreaking documentary by Linda Seagrave that explores the reconciliation of African-descended women throughout the diaspora in a three-part journey from each person's current home to their home of origin following the mother lineage. This film is one of the most profound occurrences in Karen's life and promises to awaken and inspire millions of people. Karen continues to tour in her award-winning and critically acclaimed production, Harriet's Return, based upon the legendary life of Harriet Tubman. Welcome, Karen, to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio.
Thank you so very, very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
And we know that you have recently returned from a performance. Didn't you just do a performance just in the last few days?
I did. I was in Baltimore. I was at the Central Church of Christ in Baltimore, Maryland, and it was amazing. It was really one of the best times I've had. And I've been doing this play a long time, but that particular church, it's not just the church, it was the people and their enthusiasm. They put together, they took the old sanctuary and made it into a theater. And I've been in some very, very cool theaters, but they really transformed it. The set has trees that hang upside down generally or are wired or erected in some way to stand up. They actually brought in real trees. I couldn't figure out how they were standing there. I couldn't understand how they did it. It was beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
And the whole experience was wonderful. It was warm, and we just had the best time. I loved it.
Karen, how did you begin this? I mean, what inspired you to write Harriet Returns and then to act in it as a one-woman performance? What was your inspiration?
It started when I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina, which, incidentally, I'm going to be in Charlotte again. It's really a homecoming. I'm going to be in Charlotte in March, on the 21st of March, so it's as though I'm going back to where it started, Harriet and I returning.
So that's March 21st. Where are you going to be when you're there?
I'm going to be at Pease Auditorium. It's on the Central Piedmont Community College campus. It's being sponsored by Tomorrow's Road, which is a theater company, and it also is, a social justice and activist organization started. I'm going to be falling over myself saying things, but it was ACT, the African American Children's Theater, which I helped found. The founder is Barbara Ferguson, but I was one of five people who helped her to realize the vision. We all had different components that we added to the birth of it. And so she's taken that, and it's expanded, and now it's called Tomorrow's Road. And they're sponsoring this particular performance at Pease Auditorium. But it started, all of Harriet's Return started in Charlotte when the Afro-American Cultural Center asked me to create a living portrait of black history. And they told me, the executive director at that time, Shirley Farrar, told me I could do any people I wanted to do. So I chose Phyllis Wheatley, Lorraine Hansberry, Queen Nzinga, and Harriet Tubman. And what I did was learn their lives and what was going on historically around the world that would influence or be interesting with each of these particular people. And then I would perform extemporaneously. I didn't write them down. And so shows would last. Sometimes I did it with students for 20 minutes, and sometimes I did it with adult audience for an hour and a half. But I didn't write it. I learned it. I would do it extemporaneously, as I said, and then people would ask me questions. I'd do Q&As. And Harriet became very, very popular. They all were. I loved Queen and Zynga because, you know, it's a unique story that most people don't know. And
that's right.
But people know Harriet, and I think that that's why they would request that one the most. And sometimes I'd bring in Phyllis and Harriet. Phyllis and Harriet had polar lives. They were both enslaved, but their lives were so different. And so sometimes I would have each of them talk about the other one during the course of the play.
Okay.
And so, as I said, I did that, and then I moved to New York. I'd become a playwright in the meantime while I was doing that. And I moved to New York, and I thought my Harriet days were over. But no matter what I did, Harriet would come up. I remember one time I was standing on the corner of, I think it was Madison Avenue, in the 60s, and a white businessman, suitcase and everything, I mean briefcase and everything, was standing there waiting for the light to change. He says, "So what do you know about Harriet Tubman?" For absolutely no reason whatsoever.
Wow.
I had a job with Macmillan McGraw-Hill writing music. Videos to help children learn different kinds of music from around the world. And I got a Harriet opera to condense into 7 minutes. I mean, just no matter what I did. So I got it. It's like, all right. And then Ron Milner, who was a playwright and a friend, he was an amazing playwright, and he had a theater in Detroit. He asked me to write the children's version. And so I figured it wouldn't be that hard. I'd done it a long time. I knew the history. But I love history, so I went back and did some more, and the more I did, the more I did, the more I did, and I decided to do an adult version. So that's really how Harriet's Return, as it is now, was born. And it's had so many incarnations that I figured I should have kept every draft, and then it would be in the Guinness Book of Records for a number of drafts, because honestly, I really love pieces.
So it sounds like regardless of where you turn, Harriet is very much a part of you.
Absolutely. And Harriet claimed me. She was not going anywhere. She said, "You're going to do this." Mm-hmm. "Oh, yeah, you're doing this." And then I didn't intend to be in it either. So when I wrote it, I had no intention whatsoever of performing. I'd been an actress, and I loved acting. But I felt that it was more important for me to write because of the kind of materials that I wanted to see in the world and I could create and put into the world. And so I didn't think I was going to act again. It happened that had an opportunity to do the play, and I couldn't find an actress who was available who wanted to do it. And all of a sudden, I went, "You're an actress." Did you forget that? And that's how I came to be in it.
Wow!
And I got a great director.
Is there a moment in this journey? I certainly can share some of my experiences, but. For you, is there a moment when Harriet Tubman, or as we called her on our walk, Mama Harriet, became really real to you, not just in a literary sense or acting sense, but was there ever a moment where her presence was so profound that you knew without a doubt that this was more than a book, a story, or a play?
I actually knew it when I first started doing it. I knew it when I was doing it extemporaneously because it was extemporaneous. And so she would come in and take over. People didn't recognize me. People who knew me, I mean really knew me, did not recognize me when I was doing Harriet. And the other day was interesting because after the show, you know, I went down and I changed my clothes. They had an exhibit of various exhibits about for Black History Month and different things that were going on. And I was walking through, and people didn't know. They said, "You're the one?" Oh, because she comes in. And one thing, I loved learning about Harriet. People don't, they see her as stoic and strong, which she was. But a lot of times I think her vulnerabilities and her process is lost because we see the result, but that process was so important. And as that unfolded, for instance, finding out that she was married, and I have a couple scenes actually where we see her fall in love, and we see all the things that most of us have been through with heartbreak. You don't think Harriet heartbreak, you know, and what inspired her, what was the impetus for her to get back on the road and make those 19 trips. There are times when I literally could feel, in fact, before I do a show, about a week or so, maybe even 2 weeks sometimes, if there's been a lag between one show and the next, I start getting really unhappy, and I don't know what it is. I have no idea. And I'm saying, I'm feeling depressed. I'm feeling sad. I'm miserable. What is this? And it's going back into that cellular energy that I know she has, and you said earlier she's in us. Her energy is so present. And so I had that a lot of the time. And her wanting a truth and an empowerment that she experienced for all of us to have now. And I believe that one of the gifts of accepting the I'm going to use the word challenge, of creating this piece is that I understand it, I live it, and it comes through me, and it goes on into other people. And so, yeah, she's very real to me.
Yeah.
And her demeanor, everything, it takes over. And I'm going to tell you one more thing. One time I did the show, and after, I've always had a standing ovation, and it's Harriet's standing ovation. And people, and part of it is, part of the show is a call to action, and that's part of it, too. Anyhow, I was taking my bow, and I actually like that part. It's fun. I get to be me for a moment. And and I had to get off the stage. I usually stay. It's usually three bows. I was out of there, and there was a woman. Her name was Virginia, and she always opened the door to the dressing room. She'd smile and kind of greet me and open the door. She got out of my way because I came charging off that stage. I came through. There was a ballet bar in the dressing room, which I literally was hanging over. And it was as though my ancestors and everybody else's were coming up off of me. I was crying. I was probably looking quite crazy. But it was this cathartic change that happened during the show that I've experienced it before, but never to that degree. And after, there was a woman named Ms. Dolores who said, I want to talk to you. And I do intuitive work. I do psychic work, and so did she. And she taught me something that I didn't know how to do before, which was when people are coming over who you don't want, how to block them. So I'd known her, and she said, I want to talk to you. I hadn't seen her in years, and I didn't know she was in the audience. And she came over, and she said, there were a zillion people on stage with you. I was so worried you were going to crash into them because all of these people were there. And that particular show was so different, and So life-changing for me and probably for everyone else that was there, because this energy got released because of, I'm going to use the term, repression of the reality of the period during enslavement here with all kinds of people, with all, you know, it doesn't matter racially. We have to get that off of us or else we can't go forward. And so that was one of those moments where that was coming up off of us. And that's part of the mission, to help us heal and help us to understand the long-term impact. And that's also why I said it in the present. It starts in the contemporary, because a lot of people think, well, I'm not going to go see a play about slavery. It's a play about freedom in the first place, not about slavery. And also, it does matter now. So for those who think, it doesn't matter now, that's in the past. It's not. Nothing that we haven't dealt with and undone in our cellular and psychic world is done. It doesn't matter what the background is. It's just period. It just happens. You have to get it off of you. And so Harriet comes in, and that's what she does. She gets it off of us, and she's still leading us. She's still doing, taking us on the journey.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think I may have shared with you a little bit, Karen, when we had our very first conversation. I was so excited to learn about the work that you're doing, because I've had a very personal relationship with Harriet for a number of years. In fact, I feel like she just sort of, in the old language, rides me all the time. But back in the year, I think it was 1999, I was in Wales in Europe, and I was there for five flames that were lit by indigenous communities around the world, and they were being brought together to be lit as a world, eternal world peace flame there that is now at The Hague, and by the Life Foundation. And so that night, we're up in the mountains, not so much down, you know, in the cities. We're kind of up in Snowdonia. And Snowdonia is kind of a mystical place for me. It's often where you hear reference to Merlin and the crystal caves and all. That's up supposedly in that area. So I'm just giving a sort of the mystical aspect of it. But anyway, coming back that night to where I was staying at a bed and breakfast, it was dark because there's no light pollution. So it was very dark and a full moon night. It was about a 45-minute walk back to where I was staying. And all of a sudden, it was as though the moon, this light of the moon, I don't know if I've ever seen a moon this huge. I started to have, it was like this story began to play out in front of me. And the bottom line of the story was that I was to go back home and lead a walk from Pennsylvania to Georgia, understanding that many of the trails I would walk through were with, you know, the crossings or intersections of passages of the Underground Railroad, and then when I got further into the south, of the Trail of Tears. I'm both Cherokee and African American lineage. And so I was like all excited about this. You know, I was like, wow, you know, this is pretty amazing that I'll be walking, you know, basically down this spine of the eastern point of America through the Appalachian Mountains, which I learned later that those are the oldest mountains in the world above sea level. So I think there's a lot of significance to that as well. But anyway, by the time I got home, I had pretty much talked myself out of doing it. I came up because at first I was caught up in walking for my ancestors and what that meant and the emotions of where I was. But by the time I got home, I said, well, you know, this is really beyond me. I have no idea what it means to do something like this. And, you know, I don't even think I can physically. And so about as soon as I walked in the house, there was a tube, a postal tube leaning in the corner. And I opened the tube, and in the tube, a young man who used to be in a theater company that my husband at the time and I founded called Uprising said that he was sitting under a tree in West Virginia, and he saw this piece of wood, and he was guided to carve it and send it to me. And on the face of the stick, right at the very top, there was a face of Harriet Tubman that he didn't even realize that's who that face was. And down the stick were the words, "Live your truth." And when I touched that stick, I knew that no matter what happened, that I would do this walk. And I knew it because it was as though the moment my hand touched the stick, the walking stick, Harriet just seemed to jump into my body. And so there was some power that was far beyond me that drove me onto the walk. And that was the beginning of 13 years of walking, not only in this country, but on all six continents around the world. So I certainly understand that embodiment that happened and how powerful that can be. And, of course, there were many other experiences, but as you were talking, that's the one that I was taken back to.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It's wonderful. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So what, you know, one of the things that you mentioned was about the human aspect of Harriet and what it must have taken for her as a person, the separation from her family, the separation from her husband. I mean, what must it have felt like when he said, no, I'm not going, you know? What is it? What would she have felt in that moment, and how was it that she was able to make that separation and go on this journey in spite of all the odds? You know, Does that come up in your play?
It does. It comes up. And that's why I put her falling in love, because you know how it is when we fall in love. It's, we're thinking, this is it. This is the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. Here's the bliss. Here it is. And then to experience having your heart broken, being left, and having, knowing that you're stronger. She has the same thing. A lot of us are stronger than the mates we choose. And making those choices, sometimes people decide to not be as strong as they are, and to seemingly salvage the love, to keep the love going. And then others decide, I have to be my full self. And so I do it both with, so I have her fall in love, and then I have her also experience the realization that this isn't going to work. And one of the tools, and this is real for her, she had voices. She had, we all do, but she paid attention to hers. And so one of the tools I use during this is that one of her voices, when she's falling apart, she goes back to get John, and he tells her, Caroline's my wife now, he has a new wife. And she gets a real bad attitude about that, and that comes to, you know, I'm getting in there, I'm getting my husband, you're not taking my husband. And when it becomes apparent she can't do anything about it and she falls apart, but the voices ask her, it's just easy to do it, who owned your life, Harriet? The voice ain't never talked cross to me like that before. Say, who life you got? I say, mine. Say, who controlling it? I say, me. Say, get on up from there. You leave John Tubman in them wood and tears. Love ain't no sentiment. It's an action. You done seen his action. Now go. Get your sister. You do what you come to do. And she still is heartbroken. But she goes along the journey, and that gets her going. Because when she goes back, she's going to get a sister and pick up a husband in the story. Mm-hmm. And so the voices have started guiding her early on when she is a teenager, and she discovers the voices. She tries to quiet them the way we all do. We all have this intuition. Mm-hmm. We all have this voice that tells us, do this. And we go, no, we don't think, I'm going to do that. It's like, okay, well, knock yourself out, but we'll be here when you get back, and you're going to need it. So we have her learn that, because that's the way for the audience to learn it. It's the way for all of us to learn it, and that how hard-headed we are about tapping in. But once we tap in, there's a character named Mama Drake who tells her, you know, if you follow it, they bring your fortune like you never seen. And she's saying, well, I really want a fortune. And she says, oh, you want this one, you know. So it's process. And so I think that she was connected. I know she was connected. There are lots of stories where one is when she went to one of the stations and she asked for $26. She says, you got my $26. And he's like, how do you know it's here? And she says, I just know it. Just give it to me. And because someone from Scotland had sent that equivalent, and she knew it. She just knew it. They told her. Her voices told her. So I love that aspect of it, the spirituality that unites all people, so that it doesn't have anything to do with religion. It has to do with just with the spirit. And all the different kinds of people, all the racial, all the different racial and ethnic people who came together in a common cause, because all human beings have the right to be free. And so we experience that as well, all ages and all stages of life. So, yeah, it's fun. And I love that people learn a lot. And I've made it as interesting and entertaining as possible, so it's not a big, long history lesson, but the history's in there, and the humanity's in there, and the joy.
Well, you know, the other part that you mentioned early on when you were talking is that it's not a play about slavery. It's a play about freedom, and it's really a call to action. Mm-hmm. What do you feel through you, Mama Harriet, is... what's her call to action for those of us here in 2014 and beyond?
The call to action is that We have access to the divine, to our spirit. We are all powerful beings. And when we pay attention to the power that's within us, that's leading us, then we go on the right path. If we only pay attention to what seems to be on the outer plane, on the physical plane, that doesn't mean ignore what's going on in the world. But it means there's something within us that says, you know, Karen, do this. Don't do that. Fulfilling your potential. Everybody, and I think when I say everybody, unless there is some sort of a damaged, really deeply damaged psyche or physical or emotional body that cannot go past whatever that issue is, has the urge and the desire to fulfill the potential. And actually, even with that, fulfilling that potential might be to overcome or whatever that issue, that problem is. But we all have this urge to, this is my highest calling. This, if I could be free, then this is what I do. And so the question becomes, so why aren't you free? And whatever is not making you free, let's fix that so that you are free, and then you can go do what it is you want to do. And so we're always on this journey of higher calling. And sometimes people get stuck when I look at, you know, some of the choices people have made, particularly around joining groups or being engaged in some sort of activities that are destructive rather constructive in living. And you can tell because it harms. It's real clear. You're either harming or helping. And if you're on the harming level, then it means you're out of sync with your path. And there's nothing to keep you from getting in sync. Is it always easy? No. But is it possible? Yes. And when once you start on that journey, if you stick to it, you get assistance. And it can go a lot faster, actually, than you think. It might mean leaving some things behind, changing. Like Harriet left her whole world behind. She went to a world she knew nothing about. And she was afraid, but she did it anyway. And that's the big deal, being afraid but doing it anyway. Being attached to something, but breaking the chains anyway. I do a workshop called Culture in the Quarter, and the first part of it is I teach it literally about culture in the quarter as it was during the period of enslavement. And then I have half of the population that's participating do culture in the quarter and create a quarter. So it speaks to, regardless of what's going on, we will be resilient and have art and have music and have language and have literature and have resistance and have cuisine and all those things. So I'll have them create a culture in a quarter as though it's in the past, but also a culture in the quarter now. So what's enslaving you now? Is it family? Is it a relationship? Is it thought? Is it environment? Is it fear? And really deal with those things so that the contemporary is just as important as the past, and they feed each other, and they help us to break free and move forward. And whatever that area that people are stuck in, you kind of have to pay attention. You absolutely have to pay attention to it, or else you can't get out of it. You have to go in. You have to go in to get out.
That reminds me of, and a lot of my references in this segment are back to some of our walks, but it reminds me of our first walk, excuse me, where we were, we came to this area where we had to walk, and instead of there being a path through the woods, it was just boulders after boulders. And I remember looking at that saying, I don't think I can do this, you know, because it meant we had to get up on top of the boulders and boulders and climb the mountain from boulder to boulder. And but then it was, you know, you start where you are, number one, and number two, you take it one step at a time. And so that was kind of our whenever we got to difficult things on the walk, that's what we would always say. And so we started walking. And later on in the afternoon, now we're walking with 40-pound backpacks. You know, everything that we need is on our back. So that evening, just as we were almost finished, so you're kind of exhausted, Karen, who was my teammate, we walked in pairs. And Karen all of a sudden disappeared. And because I was a little bit, my pace was a little different, so I was a little in front of her. And all of a sudden I heard this voice, but I couldn't find her. And I was like, oh, my God. And so then I saw the red of her backpack in between the rocks. And I remember saying, Lord, please help her, because I don't know if I can get back there and help her. Well, in the midst of that prayer, she was able to inch her way back up and get back on the walk. But as she got closer, we were both pretty tired, and we still had probably another couple of miles to go. And I remember turning around and saying, imagine if we were with Harriet Tubman and we were in the woods at night, and these backpacks, instead of being backpacks, were children on our backs, and there were dogs barking in the background. What would we do? And we both looked at each other and turned around and kept going. And as we kept going, all of a sudden, these dogs started barking from, I don't know where, we never saw the dogs, but it made the whole experience so real. So the call to action that was given to us in that moment by our ancestors was that no matter what you're up against, you're bigger than that. You have within you all that you need to climb the highest mountains and get over to the other side. And that was, for me, that was the Underground Railroad. I mean, that was the journey of our ancestors. And then so I wanted to share that because that was such a poignant experience in relationship to our conversation. Karen, let me take one quick pause and let our audience know that you're listening to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams, and my guest today is Karen Jones Meadow. Karen, I'd like to take a few minutes for the second part of our show to talk about other things. I mean, I could go on all day with Harriet. I mean, I could just, you know, I just get so immersed in that. But I also wanted to honor some of the other projects that you're doing. And I was wondering if you could share a little bit about my mother's daughter. That sounds absolutely fascinating.
My mother's daughter is wonderful. Linda Seagraves has brought together 18 women from various places throughout the diaspora. And we came together a year ago. It was Labor Day weekend a year ago. And we had a retreat. And we bonded. It was unbelievable the way that we bonded. It was just amazing. It's kind of like, you know, when you're in college and you're in the dorm and you all become one. It was like that in a very
yes.
short period of time. And we had our DNA tested prior to, and we didn't find out what the results were until the third day. But we discussed similarities, differences, how African ancestry, and we only did the DNA for the African ancestry at that point, what it meant to us, or what Africa meant to us, what being of African descent, period, means. Is it important, unimportant? Just all the various kinds of, and we were all different ages as well, and all different backgrounds. And it turns out that I was the only one who was, my lineage is from Mozambique, which is interesting, because most of us are from West Africa, you know, Northwest Africa. And so I had Mozambique and Angola. There were two other people who had Angolan ancestry, too, but mine was the only one, Mozambique. And my best friend always calls and says, it's 78 degrees in Mozambique. And I'm looking forward to going there. I'm like, it's beachfront. I like it there. But I am, so what we're going to do, we're all going to go, we're going to go as a group to our homes of origin together to see what it's like to go there, to meet family. Because we had the DNA tested, there are people who are, we can tell who we belong to. And I've been to Africa before. I've been to several places. But I was not in Mozambique, but I was in South Africa. I was in Zimbabwe. And trying to remember the other person in that area. Anyhow, right this second I can't. And they kept telling me, you look like you're in the belly, you look like you're in the belly. And I could be because of where the lineage is. And so I'm going to have everything narrowed down. But we're going to come back and share. And the mother lineage, the mother line does not change. It's the same. So it's going back 55,000 years in my case. That's how far back we went. And my mother, what was great was it was the weekend of my mother's birthday. And my mother always wanted to have her DNA done, and she didn't do it. And I kept trying to get her to do it. So for her birthday, I got to tell her. And she was really, really happy. She loved it. And we, as I said, we bonded. It's going to be really interesting to see what going to Africa and coming back with this specific intention of meeting family who we don't know from this particular lifetime, but that lineage is there, and coming back and saying, okay, does it make a difference or does it not make a difference? How grounding is it? I know when I went to Africa, I found it very grounding. Initially, it was culturally interesting and all of that. By the time I left there, well, actually, just a few days in, I felt a sense of belonging on the planet that was different than I'd had before. It was of true, we belong here. And I always thought I had that, but it went to, you know, the 100th power. I have a play that I'm doing called Crystals, which I call the play of minding other people's business. And in it, Cherokee, African-American, Irish, Chinese, and Spaniard women traveling, and they don't want to be. And did I say Chinese? I think I did. In Chinese, I'm not sure if I put it in there.
Yes,
And the play, in a real nutshell, is it does matter knowing what your ancestry, your culture, your spiritual practices, your language, all of that matters. And it also doesn't. And so you have to have it, and if you don't have it, it's like a piece of you is missing, but you can get it psychically, spiritually, if you did not get it. And, it, you know, it addresses the fact that we were here and not knowing because we couldn't practice our language or anything, not knowing who we were or where we came from. It seems to be a disadvantage, but then if you go in psychically and you reconnect to it, then it is grounding, and it makes you part of the whole, and that all of these elements and all of these different people are part of the fabric of life, and that although it's not the only thing that matters, it is significant, so that each of us can be a part of the tapestry that is life. That is life.
That's it. Well,
and
as I understand it,
something different to contribute, and if you can't contribute who you are going back to fulfilling your potential, then there's a longing and a need that just can't be satisfied until it gets put into place, like a jigsaw puzzle. I'd say you got to put it into place.
Well, how many women are traveling to Africa? How many have gone through this experience with you and will continue all journey to Africa?
There are 18 of us.
Wow.
And Linda's working on going into the second. And, I mean, and as I said, everybody was really such dynamic and interesting people. It was such an amazing group to be a part of. I felt very grateful to be there. There's Iris. Iris is a sculptor. Her last name is Vasquez. And she's a sculptor. She's an amazing sculptor. She just had a show at the museum, and she climbs mountains. I mean, literally, she's about to go and climb Mount Kilimanjaro, I think, is the next one she's doing.
Oh, my goodness.
Naomi Tutu, who's Bishop Tutu's daughter, is there, and she has a center that she created, a women's center in South Africa that she takes people to annually in August. She's part of it. There's a woman in San Francisco and Belanda, and she takes young women. She does this empowerment with young women, and then she takes them to various places throughout the country during the summer to learn their history and culture throughout the United States. They're just all these. Barbara Hudson, she passed away. She's an artist, and she passed away this year, and had done all these amazing things with the arts and museums and whatnot throughout the country. So just a whole, as I said, dynamic group of women who are doing things to empower people and express themselves fully, coming together to do this. And then we did this ancestral walk that was supposed to be a 20-minute relaxing relaxing event. Turned into 2.5 hours. And
oh,
we were not relaxing. We called in the ancestors, and they came in droves. They came. We had everybody's ancestor was on the path. And it was amazing, and it was not quite what we planned, but it was incredible. So, and the film, the people who are filming it, it's absolutely beautiful on top. It's just beautifully shot. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Wow. Well, I can't wait for the documentary. Do you have a sort of timeline that you're working on, or right now you're still in the beginning stages?
Well, Linda has it. We're on the second part. I know she's working on us going on the second leg, which is going to Africa. And so hopefully within the year we'll be doing that. And
well, I know.
Then the third part is when we come back and we gather again to say, okay, so now that we did this, what does it mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I didn't mention earlier, and I think we should, your production company, On Purpose Productions, in regards to Harriet Tubman. You've been celebrating from 2013 to this month coming up, 2014, the 100th anniversary of Harriet Tubman's death and or passing, and you've also created the International Day of Theater in her honor. So you're doing some amazing work. Let's talk a little bit about the work that you're doing with, you know, I have to say this, one of the ones that really caught my eye was Peace, Pods, and Pearls. Now, you got to tell me about that work, Bob.
Peace Pods and Pearls is a workshop I do where, you know, people say peace. They always say peace, peace, and silence. You know, what does peace mean? Peace is different for everyone. And so with this workshop, I help people to discover what their actual peace is. What does that really mean for you? So we define peace for ourselves, and for our personal community, and then the world, and then we plant. We literally plant pods, so that this can grow, and we visit it, and then the pearl comes from, and we really use pearls. there was a story that I heard, and his name is. It's Jack Blackman, that there was an oyster and the a piece of grain got in, and it was really irritating. It was really, really aggravating, and trying to get it out and could not get it out, and it was annoying, and just trying to work on it, and finally decided, I can't do anything about it. It's here. I'll just have to live with it. But didn't fully give up. So anyhow, it turns into a pearl. And so those things that are aggravating us and that we, as I said earlier, you have to go in and get out, can eventually turn into something beautiful if we trust and give it our attention and have an intention of making the best out of whatever it is. It can grow and blossom into something beautiful. My umbrella is drama as a healing art, and I came to that because I love theater. I went to theater when I was younger. I grew up in New York, so my parents took me to plays and all of that. And I saw the first play that I remember is Oliver, and it was a Broadway production, and this woman singing As Long As He Needs Me. She's got red velvet and a cloak and coming up the aisle. It's magnificent. And as long as he needs me, that's where I'll be, no matter what, blah, blah, blah. I love him, love him, love him. And I'm sitting there and thinking, and I'm little, I was young, maybe 8, 9. And I said, I'm going to love like that. Yes, as long as he needs me, no matter what, I'm going to do that. And then in the next scene, he kills her. And I went, maybe not. So I could get the lesson without the problem, you know, without the drama, without the personal
right.
drama. So drama as a healing art, you know, we can learn so much from watching not just theater, but our own lives, so that when some drama is in your life, it's not there to hurt you, it's there to help you. And if we learn from it and we grow from it and we move on, it enhances our experience. I believe that we are on the planet to enjoy ourselves, to fulfill our potential in a joyous way, not a torturous way, and that any dramas that are there are to be overcome, to be faced, to be overcome, or embraced and annihilated through love and power, our own personal power, and so that we can grow on and experience more of the joy of being here. I do think there's joy in being here. And I see all the horror. I don't have my head stuck in the sand. But I also know the more people who embrace their power and use it for the good of others, the fewer people will be in circumstances that are harmful, because we'll be able to get and help other people get out of it. And that's the point, to share in love and move forward in the beauty of life. I really believe that.
You know, Karen and I were having this conversation this morning. We were talking about, you know, how when we get to that moment that you speak of that feels, I'll use the word chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying, well, you know, sometimes we often tend to run from the chaos instead of in it and through it, although it doesn't usually let us go until it's completed whatever it's there for.
Mm-hmm.
But I was saying, you know, it's kind of like having a baby. You know, you get to that last trimester and get into that period of transition, and it just, you just want to scream and holler, and, you know, it doesn't matter what's going on in the world, you know, it's, and then all of a sudden this beautiful baby is born or birthed. That's kind of, you know, what it feels like when you're in the midst of this chaos, and in the midst of it, you don't know how it's going to end up. You don't know, you really don't even know at some point how to pull yourself out, except you know you can keep going, you know. And so drama as a healing art, I've always found to be very powerful, because we can live into other people's stories. We can grasp the call to action that these stories, the plays, the movies, the, you know, that they bring us, especially when we look at our ancestry. And going back to a historical figure like Harriet Tubman. And you can only imagine what it took to do what she did. And so I know that there was a chaotic moment, you know, on so many levels. But, you know, perseverance.
And being out, you know, running in, you know, she traveled a lot in the winter. You know, people trying to kill you. I know there have been times when I've been at my computer and I'm tired and I'm writing and I'm thinking, you're never going to get this sentence right. It's never going to be right. You know, say, so are you walking from Pennsylvania to Canada? No. Are you cold? No. You know, so, you know, what are you whining about? So,
right.
The call to action is, you know, she says, all y'all powerful your own self, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're calling on us, but you have to use your own. There is a joy also in using your own power. There is an absolute joy and fulfillment of a job well done. That, and it doesn't mean you have to do everything by yourself. The Underground Railroad was a collection of people. But there is an absolute euphoric moment of, I got it done, I did it. It's, you know, even like taxes, when your taxes are done, it's like, oh, yeah, good, they're done. So I just think that we... Because, you know, I look at television sometimes. I love TV. I actually love TV, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I really do. Now, there's a lot of terrible on TV, but there's so much wonderful that can happen. And I love books as well. And when it says, you know, you need a loan, there's no ad saying you've got plenty of money and you're feeling real good about yourself. Never. You never see that. And so you have to counter that with, what's the reality? Why do I need a loan? They told me I need a loan. So there's some they, the great they out there. And that's why so much of Harriet's Return is about pulling it in to who you are, what you believe, or even what you want to believe, even if it's not true. If you think about some of the entertainers, I'll think of say Mary J. Blige, who had, you know, some tough times coming up and things like that. But she believed it, you know. People who trust that they're valuable, and I think that's important for us too. I think that knowing we are of value in the great scheme of things, we might not be of value seemingly to some people we know or we're constantly told we're not, but within us, we didn't get here and not be of value, because if you believe in a spiritual power, why would it make some garbage? It just wouldn't. And so why would we believe that we are less than? And so getting to the right to be your whole self, the right to express your whole self, and doing the actions that support that, making choices as opposed to going with the flow. I saw somebody yesterday, a young man whose pants were beyond just low. He literally... They were around his thighs. I'm like, really? This is not a good look. I know you know it's not a good look. And you can't walk. You might want to pull him up. But he didn't want to because he wanted to be part of the whole. So you have to decide what whole you want to be a part of. And if it makes you happy, fine. But make sure it's making you happy. I'm not against anything. I'm actually for everything. And I think that as long as it's the thing that you want, it's fine. With peace, pause, and pearls, part of it is stick to your definition of peace. Don't change it unless you evolve and it changes for you. But if your peace is to come home at 5 o'clock and watch the Flintstones till 9, that's your peace. Own it. Live it. And once you're on that path, which is your path, something new will branch out, because when you're on your own path, it only ascends. It does not go down. When you're on the wrong path, you kind of go left and right. And I don't want to sound like I'm preaching, because I have been left and I have been right and I've been up and I've been down. But I do know, as I have a few years now, that when I'm on the right path, there's a comfort and a wholeness and an exhilaration that kicks in that makes you go, okay, I'm on the right course now. This is good. This is good. So, and I want our young people to feel that a lot. I really do. It's important.
Yeah, you know, before I listen to different motivational blurbs in the mornings. I like to start my day. I just go to YouTube, put in inspiration or motivation. And today I was listening to Ray Lewis, and one of the things that the football player that came out of it, he was saying that one thing that he knew he had that he didn't think anybody had as much as he, and that was effort. That no matter what it was, he was going to put into his experience and opportunity and training to be the best athlete in 1993, and he knew nobody could out-effort him. And so here he is now, 16, 17 years later, and still going forward, you know, in when he was doing his speech. And I thought about that, you know, I was thinking about Mama Harriet, and I was thinking about those triumphant moments in my own life. Sometimes it's just keep going. If you're on the path that you know you're on, just keep going. Don't let anybody out-effort you, and you will end up where you want to be. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but that's what effort gives us, the opportunity to overcome the obstacles or challenges to meet that ultimate goal. I wanted to just say we're down to about 20 seconds before the show ends. So if you would please, Karen, we got to do this again, but give us your contact information real quickly so that if anyone listening wants to, they can.
All right. I'll give you my phone number first, which is 505-867-0857. My email is onpurposenow@csandcharlessandsam.com. onpurposenow@cs.com. And my Facebook, my business Facebook, is Karen Jones Meadows Now. You have to have the now. So Facebook.com, Karen Jones Meadows Now. And my website is KarenJonesMeadows.com. It's being updated, but my contact information is there. And the old website, some pages from the old website still show up, so you can find things about Harriet and whatnot. I have an e-package that I can send out. And I'm going to be in Charlotte. I'm touring. If anybody's interested in the play, I thought I was going to do some excerpts, so I was prepared to do that, but we don't have time, so that's okay. I have a youth version as well, and I bring the students on stage when I do the youth version, and so I love doing that also. So I thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much, and have a wonderful performance. What's the date of that again, March?
March 21st. It's a Friday at 7:30 at Pease Auditorium in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, and thank you very much, Karen, again. Have a wonderful performance. Maybe, who knows, maybe I might be able to show up in the audience. We'll see.
That is great.
But it's been a pleasure having you, and just keep on doing all the wonderful things that you're doing. You're certainly making an impact in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.